Today on Broadway for Wednesday, September 21st, 2016, I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
James, it's hump day, so that means we're halfway to the weekend.
Excellent.
Always looking on the bright side.
Always look on the bright side of life. Was that it?
Yeah.
That was it.
That was it. That was definitely it.
Always look on the bright side of life.
It's the exact same things I just listened. Yeah, whatever.
Okay. So, the first story is a continuation of the last story of yesterday's broadcast. You're going to make me cry again, aren't you?
Unfortunately, I think I am. In an exclusive interview with my Broadway World colleague, Richard Ridge, the great Angela Lansbury, who, as you said, made us all cry with her incredible live rendition of Beauty and the Beast from yesterday's show, said that she would, in fact, not be returning to Broadway in the Chalk Garden, as has been rumored for quite a few months now. The 90-year-old theatrical great told Richie, quote, at my time of life, I've decided that I want to be with family more. And being alone in New York doing a play requires an extraordinary amount of time left alone. She went on to say that she didn't want to be on her own in the city, quote, chomping through the snow and doing all those things when you're doing a play. She concluded saying, I'm feeling fine. My health is very good. But nevertheless, I have moments where I realize that I'm not the person I was maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago. If you don't remember, rumors started circulating over the summer that Scott Rudin would be bringing the show to Broadway with Angela Lansbury starring. And rumors also said that deals and contracts had actually already been finalized and they were just working on a theater. But alas, that's not to be, James. It kind of sounds even more, not to bring the tears on and the waterworks even more than they already were, but unless something changes, it sounds like we might have seen the last of the great Angela Lansbury on Broadway. I hope that's not true.
Wow. Way to bring us all down there, Matt.
I know. I was struggling to even get it out. I didn't want to say it myself, but I mean, the way she talks about it, I mean, her family's not in New York, so unless someone comes and stays with her during the run of the show, it doesn't sound like that's something she's really up for at 90 years of age.
I prefer to think of it as I think she's going to be the next Grisabella.
I don't know that a 90-year-old riding up into the air on a tire swing is the exact way that she wants to go through her next decade, but crazier things have happened, maybe not.
All right, next up in the news, the Theater Hall of Fame announces its 2016 class.
Yeah, yesterday the Theater Hall of Fame announced its next class of inductees to be honored on November 14th at New York's Gershwin Theater. The 8-person class has a few well-known names. James, let me know if you've heard of any of these folks. Tony-winning actors Glenn Close, yep. Brian Stokes Mitchell, and Felicia Rashad. Nope. Nothing? Nope. Nothing's ringing a bell. Okay, how about Tony-winning writers Joe Masteroff, nope. Sir Tim Rice, and Marsha Norman? Nope. She's got a Pulitzer, too. Nothing?
Nope.
Okay, how about Jujamson's Executive Vice President Paul Libin?
Nope.
Okay, and last but not least, I hope you've heard at least one of them, 7-time Tony-winning costume designer Catherine Zuber.
Oh, she's fabulous.
Oh, yes, she is. The ceremony is invite-only, so congrats to all of those of you that get to go. But, James, that list is no joke, although we were joking through it. But that's a pretty heavy-hitting list, which I guess you would assume for a Hall of Fame.
I tell you, I have a bone to pick with Hollywood.
Okay.
I, for the longest time, I thought that, that the little Times Square pedestrian mall thing should be a Broadway Walk of Fame. Hmm. And the Hollywood Walk of Fame seems to be just available to anybody with the highest bid. I mean, Donald Trump has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah. From what I understand, you have to apply and pay like a $2,500 fee to get it or something along those lines. It's not all that hard.
It's like the J.D. Power Award.
But really, James, I'm surprised that you of all people would want a Walk of Fame in Times Square. Do you really need another reason for people to just stop in the middle of the sidewalk in the middle of Times Square to gum up traffic even more than it already is?
Oh, so I can pick their pockets.
Okay, that actually leads in fairly well to our next story.
All right. What is up in the show announcements?
Well, James, do you watch America's Got Talent?
Nope.
Okay. Well, their most recent season wrapped up last week in a magic act known as the Clairvoyance, finished in second place. They are made up of an Austrian couple, Tommy Ten and Amelie von Tass. Well, yesterday it was announced that they would be joining the Avengers of Magic, the Illusionists, later this year for their annual holiday stop on Broadway. And if you remember from a special episode a week or so ago, I spoke to one of the members of the Illusionists, who did say he'd been known to pick a few pockets and steal a few watches. Performances for this year's Illusionist show on Broadway begin November 25th, 2016, and run through New Year's Day of 2017. If you want to see what the Clairvoyants are all about, they're a little weird, which you would expect. I will go ahead and put a video to their AGT audition in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com.
All right, Hamilton announces a ham for ham lottery.
Yeah, in Chicago. That's the important part. In keeping with the tradition set by the Broadway production, yesterday it was announced that the Chicago sit-down production of Hamilton would also have a $10 day-of-show lottery. This one will be done exclusively online at BroadwayInChicago.com/HamiltonLottery, which we'll have a link for in the show notes. And there will be 44 tickets for each day's show available. Seat locations will vary per performance. Some seats will be located in the front row, and some will be in boxes. I don't know. I would imagine sitting in a box for this show could be kind of cool, as long as it didn't give you any feelings of Abraham Lincoln or anything along those lines. Performances and the lottery begin a week from yesterday on Tuesday, September 27th. Following up in our show news, since the show opened in March, we've tried to keep you at least as up-to-date as possible about the names of performers who will be trying their hand at the unusual White Rabbit, Red Rabbit on Monday nights at the West Side Theater. If you've forgotten, this one-person show is the same show every week, only with a different star each time. And the catch is that the stars don't get to look at the script until they step on stage. Included in the next group of stars to take a turn are Emmy winner Joey Pants, Joe Pantaleone, on October 24th. Tony nominee Alex Brightman on November 14th. I can only imagine what him looking at a script for the first time and performing it on stage could be like. And the perennial sitcom wife Nancy Travis on November 21st. For the full list of performers, check out the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com. They've had pretty much every major star you can think of since their run started in March. And I'm sure they're going to continue having great ones coming up.
Alex Brightmonster.
Dude, he's certifiably nuts in terms of how much energy that guy has. I think this could be, he might break this whole White Rabbit, Red Rabbit thing just by how excited and amped up he would get.
He's like a Coffee Generation and Snickers commercial combined.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Amped up on Mountain Dew.
Ooh. All right. Off-Broadway theaters to join Broadway in dimming the lights for Edward Albee.
Yeah, yesterday we told you that the Broadway League announced that all Broadway theaters would dim their lights for 1 minute tonight at 7:45 p.m. in honor of Edward Albee, who passed away last week. Well, yesterday, the Off-Broadway League announced that their theaters would be joining in the tribute as well. Also, in his latest column, which looked back at the autobiographical nature of some of Albee's works, especially Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Michael Riedel wrote in the New York Post that some of Albee's friends would be gathering outside of Sardi's to pay their respects. James, since I'm not located near the theater district, obviously, this isn't something that I normally keep track of, but I can't really remember very many times when both the Broadway League and the Off-Broadway League had dimmed their lights at the same time. Can you think, I mean, is this something that happens often and I just don't pay attention to it?
Insofar as officially like this, not that I can remember, other than a blackout.
That doesn't count. That's not what we're talking about.
Okay. But you know what I was thinking, and just thinking right now, is that there's a bunch of webcams in Times Square. We should probably link to those webcams and see if that makes sense, that folks who are far and away might be able to see it as through a webcam, at least.
Is it dark by 7:45 in New York at this time of year?
I want to say it is dusky right now.
Okay. I'm a little farther west than you guys are, so it's still fairly light at 7:45 here in Orlando, but I had a feeling, I knew it got darker where you are than where I am, but I wasn't sure how much darker it got by 7:45. So that's cool. We'll find one of those links and put it in the show notes in case you want to watch later tonight.
It gets really dark because all the stagehands wear black.
Fair point. Fair point.
All right. What's up in the recommendations?
Well, a few weeks ago, we discussed a blog that Damian Bazzadona, the founder and president of Situation Interactive, had written for the Huffington Post. And last week, he'd penned another one that I hadn't seen, to be honest, until it showed up in Broadway Briefing yesterday morning. In it, he discusses the intersection of Broadway and technology and some of, as he calls it, headwinds that are preventing the Broadway community, and especially the advertising and marketing industry that he is a part of, from fully embracing technology. And James, we often talk about some of these things on this show, and since you work in both industries, I wanted to kind of pick your brain and see what you thought of what Mr. Bazzadona had to say.
Well, the Bazzadog is totally connected into these things. And I mean, Damian is the founder, I think he's the owner of Situation. Interactive Situation Marketing, which does a handful of Broadway stuff, but you know, that's a small part of their business. The you know, they do other small tiny things like the Super Bowl.
Never heard of it.
The sport ball, a lot of sport ball stuff. Damian loves the sport ball. Major League Baseball, NFL properties, NBA properties, NHL properties, Olympics. Things like that. So he's totally tied in with people putting butts in seats, which is the common denominator behind all of Damian's clients. And talking to fans, whether they be New York Giant fans or whether they be fans of a Broadway show, he knows how to get in touch with these folks. And this is a really interesting article about how, you know, sports leagues have embraced variable pricing, and that Ken Davenport's talked for years about variable pricing, and that this might be coming to fruition here. Ken Davenport's The Producer's Perspective, The Producer's Perspective podcast from this weekend was the treasurer of the St. James Theater, where Something Rotten is playing, and she talked about how people at the box office are really critical to bring into the conversation with producers. And I thought it was a very interesting thing. It also gives you some tips on how to get better seats at Broadway theaters as you're talking to folks at the box office. Be nice to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and one of the things that I liked about Damian's article was kind of similar to what you just said about bringing box office folks into the marketing discussions, because the first thing that he says is that he thinks that the artists involved with creating the shows that they're marketing need to be involved in how they market the show, because in essence, the people creating Broadway shows are the best storytellers in the world. So why not let them help tell the story of their show to the people that will hopefully be buying tickets and supporting that show? I think that's really brilliant. That's not something that you hear very often, unless maybe one of the creators is also a producer, but you know, it just makes sense. You know, my part of my responsibilities with Broadway World is in the advertising side of things. And while I don't get involved with these types of conversations, I'm more on the tech side. You know, this is something that, you know, I see a lot of the things that Damian mentioned in this article about how much is dedicated towards, you know, print or online or traditional or mobile. And there's a lot of really good ideas in here. So if you're interested in kind of how the face of Broadway marketing is changing and how it can and does and should integrate technology, this is a really good article, and I'm excited to see that this is going to be an ongoing feature from him with HuffPo, and I think that he's got a lot of really good information to share.
Yeah, he's written for HuffPo for many years.
Has he? Good.
And I'm excited that he's ramped it up, because it's usually one article every quarter or so, and so it seems like he's getting more on a regular schedule here. And as for actors being involved in the marketing of the show, just want to make sure that they do not tweet when the understudies are going on. When I mentioned the ensemblist there for a second, and Mo Brady.
Yeah, that's a good one. We talked about this whole thing with Cameron McIntosh a week or so ago, saying that understudies shouldn't be involved or shouldn't let it be known when they were going to be going on until the production had officially announced it themselves, because they didn't want it to hurt sales and maybe people exchanging tickets because they didn't get to see the star. Our friend Mo Brady from the Ensemblist podcast wrote a very eloquent, very touching, I guess it's a blog or an open letter type thing about his experience being a Broadway understudy. And obviously everybody knows how much we love the Ensemblist as a podcast, and we love Mo and Nika personally, but this was a really, really well-written piece and a really insightful thing that I think people don't really understand unless you're really close to Broadway performers and know what their lives are, especially as understudies or swings or standbys or alternates or whatever they are.
I also want to recommend Patrick over at the Theater People podcast had an interview with, oh my God, his name went out of my head. Who was the director of Hamilton?
Tommy Cale.
Had a great interview with Tommy Cale. Get over to the Theater People podcast. Listen to this interview. I think they had about 35 minutes of the interview in there. Really, really fun, interesting interview. So if you're a fan of Tommy Cale, fan of the Theater People podcast, this is all going to be a great 35 minutes is going to go right by, and you're going to miss your stop on your subway.
Yeah, so listen to other theater pop podcasts, Theater People, Ensemblists, anything and everything that we've talked about over the months, and we'll be talking about more soon. Theater podcasts are good. They're cool. They're fun.
All right, get us out of here, Matt.
All right, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. You can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt and subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwaysRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for spending your hump day with us, and we'll be back and talk to you tomorrow.
Hump day?